Hello, and welcome to the Journal of Athletic Training's JAT Chat. This is presented by the Journal of Athletic Training, the official journal of the National Athletic Trainers Association. My name is Dr. Kara Radzak. I am currently an assistant professor at UNLV and your host for this evening. The purpose of tonight's event is to provide an open forum for athletic trainers and other allied healthcare professionals to ask questions and discuss two recently published manuscripts related to patient-reported outcome measures from the Journal of Athletic Training. This evening, I'm joined by Dr. Kenny Lamb, an associate professor at A.T. Still University in Mesa, Arizona, and the director of the Athletic Training Practice-Based Research Network, also known as the ATPBRN. He is the lead author of the manuscript entitled Use of Patient-Reported Outcome Measures in Athletic Training, Common Measure Selection, Considerations, and Practical Barrier. We are also joined tonight by Dr. Johanna Hoke. She is an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky, whose work, The Relationship Among Three Generic Patient-Reported Outcome Instruments in Patients with Lower Extremity Health Conditions, is currently available on JAT's online FIRST platform. In order to make tonight's event work as smoothly as possible, we ask that you submit your questions in the Facebook Live comment section, or you can tweet your questions to @JAT_NATA using the hashtag JATChat, all one word. At this point of time, I would like to introduce Drs. Hoke and Lamb. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me this evening.
Thank you for inviting me.
So the first question that I want to ask, I want to actually direct to you, Kenny. In your manuscript, you use the term patient-reported outcome measures, or PROMs. So what are PROMs, and how do you define them?
So I think the easiest way to think about PROMs is actually to go a bit higher and talk about clinical outcomes first. And so any sort of clinical outcome we think about in athletic training, it's any outcome that is, you know, it has to be meaningful to two parties, and typically that's the patient and the clinician. And I think traditionally we've thought about outcomes from a clinical aspect. And if we look at the disablement levels that kind of exist at the body structure and function level, so your impairment of range of motion, strength, things of that nature. And so those are typically clinically or clinician reported outcomes. And those outcomes are more meaningful to the clinician. Obviously, we use those to guide our patient care. And so on the other side of the spectrum, we have patient-rated outcomes, and those are outcomes that are meaningful and important to the patient. And so when we think about patient-reported outcome measures, those are simply self-report surveys or questionnaires that patients fill out to assess their health status. And typically, we think about outcomes from a patient's perspective that are important to them at the activity and participation level, so your functional tasks and things like quality of life. And so patient-reported outcome measures are simply those surveys and questionnaires that we use to assess the health status of the patient.
Thank you. And Johanna, you use the term in your manuscript, patient-reported outcome instruments. Are we talking about the same thing here?
Yeah, and we are. So I think it was interesting when thinking about the two different titles of our papers and the information that we're sharing and delivering in our papers. And we are talking about the same thing. We're just calling it two different items. And moving forward, I think it would be a good conversation to have to identify a term that we would use similarly across as many parties as we can, so we can eliminate some of that confusion if that confusion does exist.
Have y'all heard different terms being used for these? What else is being thrown out there?
So I think that you would also hear different terms kind of in the beginning part of that term. So always starts with patient, but I've heard things like patient reported outcomes, patient rated outcomes, patient based outcomes. And I think we as a profession have used those terms interchangeably, in addition to the terms measures and instruments. Mm-hmm. So those are all kind of different terms that are out in the literature right now.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with Kane.
I was going to say, have you heard anything else?
Self-rated surveys, I think, if you want to move away from patient, but primarily patient and then something afterwards.
Okay. So Kenny, in your manuscript, what selection criteria did you find athletic trainers were utilizing to select these PROMs?
Yeah, so in our paper, we sent out a survey to basically the entire membership list of the NATA. I think it was back in 2016. Mm-hmm. And so then we kind of split those athletic trainers up to those who do use PROMs and those who do not. And for those who do use PROMs, they rated the top three criteria they use in terms of selecting a measure is that the measure has to be easily understandable to the patient. So that's number one. Number two is that it was easy for the clinician to score and interpret the findings from the measure. And the third one was that the measure was reliable and valid.
So that brings us to why you're here, Johanna. What did you find in your manuscript?
So our paper, we really wanted to look at the validity of some generic patient-reported outcome measures. When we think about some of the barriers that Kenny just mentioned, we can find ways to address those barriers. And so from our perspective, we wanted to look at the validity of generic patient-reported outcome instruments that might be a little bit more easier for clinicians to utilize in practice. That might be more developed for the high-functioning, physically active patient population that we treat. Some of the instruments that are out there, especially in the generic population, they weren't intended for that 19-year-old soccer player or that 15-year-old football player. So we wanted to begin to look at the reliability, validity, and this paper was primarily the validity of two other generic outcome measures that clinicians could potentially consider to use in practice. Mm-hmm. This is the gold standard that's commonly utilized in orthopedic literature, which is the short form 36 or the SF36 and then the SF12. Go ahead. Yeah. So from our results, we were able to identify that there was good convergent and divergent validity. So they were measuring some similar constructs as that gold standard measure in our in the orthopedic world, and then also they weren't correlating, which is also good when we want to think about divergent validity. So we were able to suggest that clinicians could consider utilizing these other measures that might address some of the barriers that Kenny just discussed and that had been identified in some previous literature.
Great. So Kenny, did you find that a lot of people were using generic or were they using more specific patient-reported outcome measures?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So we did ask the athletic trainers, for those who did use patient-reported outcome measures, which type did they use? And of the people that said that they used PROMs routinely, about 86% of them reported using a body region-specific outcome measure, which makes sense. A bunch of those measures typically assess the patient from a functional standpoint. And then that was followed by about 70% of that group, again, reported that they used single item measures. And so those are one question items that typically look at the patient from a very global perspective. And then the third category of generic measures, about 60% of that cohort used generic measures.
So can you guys both weigh in on why a clinician would choose a generic versus a specific, or Kenny, you even mentioned that the single reporting?
Yeah, so I think, or Johanna, you wanna go?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So the three different types of measures function obviously differently. The generic measures typically look at patients from a more global level. And so when we talk about things like quality of life encompasses things like physical functioning, emotional functioning, social functioning, and those are typically captured in generic measures. Mm-hmm. Versus more, again, there are a very variety of specific measures in athletic training. Typically that's the body region specific, but you can also have condition specific measures. And those are typically, as it sounds, more specific to the body region. So you can capture more sensitive changes over time versus a single item measure is a one item question that captures a patient typically on the 0 to 100 scale. And so in terms of selecting, oftentimes we would say that you should clinicians should be using a combination of generic and a body region specific measure, because not only will you capture quality of life on a global level, but also be able to capture small but important changes at the body region level. And so previously I was having a conversation with colleagues saying that, you know, 10 years ago when I came here at TSU, our big thing was like everyone should be using a generic and also a region specific measure. Again, reasons for what I just stated. But we've come to a point where, you know, maybe simple is better. And oftentimes I think you can capture at least some meaningful information just by using, say, three single item measures where you're capturing, again, the levels of the disablement. So again, body structure, function, and then as well as activity and participation levels. And so there are several single item measures that can help you achieve that goal without having to do like two full-fledged patient-reported outcomes, both at the body region and generic levels.
I would agree. I think for me, when I'm teaching students and I'm discussing with students and giving them some courage to begin utilizing patient-reported outcome measures in their practice, I always suggest a generic because it's one that you can give to any patient that would walk in your door. So if you want to get comfortable and you want to, you know, really master something to start, for me, I always suggest that one because anybody that comes in, you can give that instrument and learn more about their health condition and how it's impacting them. And, you know, as you grow comfortable and begin to see the data that you get back and how you can utilize that, then I always, you know, my next step is go to your EMR and take a look at, you know, the patients that you treated last year, what type of health conditions were coming into your clinic, and then start to target one of those groups. So potentially, you know, you saw a lot of ankle sprains last year. That's great. So, you know, go into the literature and identify a region specific for the ankle. And now when those patients come in, you begin to add that one and slowly grow your toolbox. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned about patient-reported outcomes from AT Still University roughly 10 years ago. So I was taught under that of utilizing those two instruments and gathering all that information. And I find a lot of value in that still, especially with research projects and things. But I'm with Kenny that now it's really just gathering data and starting. But I take the approach when teaching students to begin to utilize it. I suggest using a generic and getting comfortable with one, giving it to everyone that they see. And then once you're, you know, competent, then beginning to add others.
Thank you guys. So we've got a question from the audience, and I think it's a really interesting question that a lot of people probably have on their mind. And how do you know that a patient-reported outcome measure is good, right? How can I figure out, I'm a clinician and I'm now inspired to start doing this, how do I determine if it's good?
That's a great question that, you know, people ask a lot. And I think beginning to reach out to your resources. So there's a lot of level of individuals that know certain ones, and you can begin to communicate, what do you use in your practice? Why do you use it in your practice? With our students, I like to have them make like some handouts. I'm looking up top of my computer. They can put up at their computer where they've really gone back and they've summarized some of that information as it relates to, you know, how do we measure change? Is it reliable? Is it valid and reliable? What are some of those psychometric properties that have been tested? I think also, you know, when you read the literature, when you're searching for some treatment strategies for your patient population, I'm hoping that we're moving in a direction where there will be some patient-reported outcome measures included in that evidence. Mm-hmm. So then you can really begin to hone in on those instruments that are already used in that population. Or in that, you know, that study that you're reading. And, you know, if that author did due diligence, hopefully they've provided you at least references to some of the validity, the reliability, and some of the developmental properties that have been done for those instruments. But I also will be the first to admit, I know it's not easy because there's a ton of instruments out there. You can, you know, Google all kinds of great things and all kinds of not so good things. So I recognize that it's challenging. I just hope that, you know, there's a lot of resources that are available, and clinicians, you know, all around that I think could be good consults. And then also the literature that you're looking at, I think can provide you with some good foundational knowledge. Kenny, do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, I'll just kind of reiterate. I think when we look at selecting a measure, typically, well, we see it as in like two general categories. One is to make sure instrument itself is sound, and that typically relates to things like reliability, validity, responsiveness. So responsiveness is things like standard error measurement or clinically minimal clinical important difference, things of that nature. So I think we have to look at it from an instrument standpoint, as if we were to use any sort of instrument in our clinical practice. We just need to make sure that from an instrumentation perspective, it's a sound instrument. So that's one category. And then the other category is if this instrument is sound, then does it actually, can I use it in my clinical practice? And we kind of group that in this general category of clinical utility. So is it appropriate for my clinical practice? Is it acceptable by my patients? And is it feasible within my clinical practice? And will it help me achieve the goals that I'm trying to achieve? So I think we often think about patient-rated outcome measures as something new and different. But really is just an instrument, and we should treat it as if we were using any other instrument within our patient care approach.
So another related question from the audience is, are there any online resources available to streamline the collection of PROMs and manage data?
So, Can you clarify the question? I don't even know if you can clarify. Are we talking about, are there resources in which we can find good outcome measures, or are there resources?
Let's break it into two questions. Okay. Because I think there's probably the question out there of where can I go to find these things? And then what are my resources to manage? Because we'll start getting into that one a little bit with the time consumption here in a second, but where can people go to find these first?
Okay, so there is a repository. I always forget the name of the website. I think it's Sports Medicine Research. I think they have a repository of patient reported outcome measures. And so they have a list of measures in which you could click and also find out about the instrument essentials, again, the reliability, validity, responsiveness of each of those measures. I would toot my own horn and say, look at the article that we just published, because one of the aims that we're really trying to do with the survey was to identify what measures were being currently used in athletic training. So common measures currently being used by athletic trainers, with the basic assumption that some athletic trainers have gone through this process of identifying, you know, good instruments. So, and also instrument that would work for our patient population. So there are a list of outcome measures within our article that I think would be an excellent starting point for athletic trainers. So I think those are two kind of good references. And as Johanna said before, there are a bunch of athletic trainers out there with this general interest in patient reported outcome measures. So just reach out to them, and I'm sure they'll be more than happy to help you out.
So shout out to Chris Coons in the background. We already have a link that we're going to send out. We'll send out through Twitter and everything after this is up. So thanks, Kenny. Johanna, do you have any other suggestions of places to find?
That website is one that we've used quite a bit. And, you know, through the years, students have found some really interesting ones out of there. So I would second that. And then additionally, you know, to second Kenny's second point, in their paper, they do a great list of a lot of the region specific, quite the extensive table, which provides you a lot of the names. And I haven't cross-referenced them to the link that Chris just sent, but I bet a lot of them are there and accessible through that website, just looking at some of the titles and knowing what I found on that link before too.
Great. So now let's tackle the other question. How do we make these more manageable given the high patient load that athletic trainers have? Do we have any advice or resources for managing?
I'll start, Kenny, that's okay. So I think when, you know, I've assigned this for students in our post-professional programs over the years, I've always had them really start with identifying what their resources are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are the resources that are available to you? What type of EMR do you have? Do you have access to a printer? Do you have access to tablets? You know, so really laying out those resources. And then once you've identified those resources, also identifying what your goals are for the utilization of the instruments in your practice, and then aligning those two to meet. So when we think about utilizing these instruments and we think about the patient load that comes in, then, you know, really looking at what does your day look like and what does your interaction look like and what's going to fit best with how you practice clinically in your own environment. You might have many other healthcare providers within your athletic training clinic. It might just be you. You might have a few students. So really addressing that and then tackling that, right? So really looking across all those different pieces and figuring out how it's going to be best to begin to integrate that into your practice. And you know, I've had students start with paper on clipboards and taking those paper and clipboards, taking them back, scoring them, you know, looking at the information. I've had students develop them electronically. We had a student develop them electronically with PDFs. So then you could, you know, you could do them electronically, and they had tablets in their clinic. So the patient could do it on a tablet. It would be saved. They would have access to that information. I've had students with their with their EMR, figure out how to develop them within the EMR. The patient completes it on paper. They go in and they score it through the EMR. Then it's loaded in that patient's file. And then they're able to have that data. I've had them scan it into files. So there's a method for everyone, and it's not a one size fits all method. And that's one thing that doing that assignment really taught me over the years, is even the same student going into that clinical environment had a different approach, right? They identified their practice very differently, and they identified how they work very differently. From the data management piece, and Kenny might be able to provide a little bit more input on this. You know, for me, I always started with a simple Excel sheet for our students, and being able to take those data and put them into bar graphs or put them in and show their patients, you know, what they're finding, in addition to, you know, keeping that in the health record and everything, but when really wanting to look at it and look at the change versus 100, you know, 0, 15, 20, 25, it looks better when it's a nice bar graph and you can see these changes and visualize it. So for me, it was something as simple as, okay, teach them how to make a bar graph and then go in and show that and then take it to your patient from that perspective. But you know, everybody's very different, and everybody's very different in how they want to provide them in their practice. And so I always started from ground zero. Just observe your practice, observe your environment, identify your resources. Some have a lot more and some have a lot less, and then work within those pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with anything that you're trying to implement into your clinical practice, you have to understand your natural workflow. Because if it doesn't work with your natural workflow, you're not going to be able to implement it. And I think there are strategies in terms of using technology and software to kind of help facilitate. But again, you have to understand how your natural workflow exists and how does it technology actually can help you. Because while technology is always thought about as something that's going to make things easier, if it doesn't work in your workflow, it's going to be a hurdle more than it is going to help. And so to add upon that, I think for athletic trainers who are at least just trying to begin the process, I would point them in the direction of those single item measures. Again, when we're talking about patient reported outcome measures, we're really wanting to try to grasp or evaluate the person from a whole person's perspective. So I would encourage anyone trying to start, just start with three simple questions. The numeric pain rating scale, so on the scale to 0 to 10. And I feel like athletic trainers say, you know, we ask that all the time anyways, but we don't realize that that's actually a single item patient reported outcome measures that that we should be tracking more formally. The second one would be the global rating of function. So on the scale to 0 to 100, how would you rate the function of and whatever is injured the arm. And then the last one would be on the scale from 0 to 100, how would you rate the overall disability of again, that of you as a whole person, really? And so those are three simple questions that when you're kind of getting crushed on that mad rush with your athletes, you can really, it only takes less than 30 seconds to ask those questions. So step number one is ask those questions. And the step number two is record those somewhere so that you have them stored somewhere.
Thank you, guys. You're providing a lot of information that can be utilized. What other strategies do you recommend to increase the use of PROMs in traditional settings?
For me, I print them out and I give them to students and we just read them in the classroom, right? So the first thing is just to, I always say, is just read it. And I read, you know, I reread them a lot too, because sometimes I forget, you know, which one asked which question. But I think just getting confident with what it's asking is sometimes one of the hardest pieces. And when you hand it to a patient and someone says, well, what does that mean? You know, or I don't understand. If you've read through it and you're very confident about the question, you know, it'll still take a second to apply it to that patient, but you understand, you know, what it's asking and what it's saying. And not that people don't read it, but I always find that like sitting them down and printing them out and just reading through them and really, you know, asking yourself questions about the questions helps you gain more confidence and knowledge in the assessment. And I think that kind of demystifies, I used that word once in a talk that I gave, but I do think it kind of demystifies just the instrument itself. Mm-hmm. And then helps you, you know, ask yourself some of the hard ones, because they'll come and you'll be like, huh, interesting. I wonder how they thought of that, you know, or why did they interpret it that way? So it's very helpful. So that's one thing I tell people to do a lot is just leisure reading and really dissect those questions and think about your patients. You know your population. What would they ask you, you know, and begin to work through some of that.
So from a preceptor standpoint, how can preceptors start to support academic exposure of their students to PROMs, and especially if this is something that's new to the preceptor?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, because I think the students now are bringing this quote unquote new information into the clinic. I think the best we can do as a profession is continue providing those educational opportunities for practicing clinicians to learn about the basics of patient-reported outcome measures, and then relying on kind of the student to be part of the teaching process with the preceptors. I think also just being open to saying, okay, well, let's just give it a try. I think the idea of just keeping it as simple as possible is probably the best way to get buy-in. And so there are a number of different strategies that we talked about. I mean, you can even just break it down to, we're only going to ask global range of function at one question for all ankle injuries, and that's all we're going to do this semester. And then once the semester is over, taking a look at the data and saying, oh, wow, look, this is what we learned. And then I think that kind of at least generates some momentum and also some buy-in.
I would agree. I think it's a great opportunity for students to give back to their preceptors. You know, I think allowing students to provide some knowledge sharing and giving it to the preceptor, I think will strengthen their knowledge and their competence, and then also, you know, build a relationship with the preceptor. And I think, you know, when the preceptor and the student are communicating with the patients, if it's every ankle sprain, it's just, you know, it's what it is. This is what we do now. And would you please answer this question? And giving the students some of you know, the support to begin to ask those questions of the patients that come in, I think is really big. And I think they will look for the preceptor to support that. And if the preceptor doesn't support it, they might not do it. So I think having the support is really key too.
So another audience question regarding education and preceptors are, what are the current CADI standards that maintain education about patient-reported outcome measures? And is there any data to describe whether faculty and preceptors are integrating them currently?
That's a good question. So the new standards definitely include them. Those exact numbers, I cannot rattle off for you right at this time. But, you know, they're definitely, I think patient-reported outcomes for me marry quite nicely with the ICF model. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where I begin to introduce them or talk about them when I talk about the ICF model and how we can capture those domains of function and really lay out some good clinician-based outcomes for our impairments and then our patient-based and clinician-based outcome for our activity limitations and participation restrictions, patient-reported outcomes, and utilizing some of those instruments for our other factors that might be influencing their domains of function. So from the PRO piece in the standards, I can't rattle off, I'm sorry, I can't do that, especially for the new ones. When it comes to the data of them being incorporated, I know that they're in the current standards. I don't know though, Kenny, I don't know if you know much about, I don't know if they would have that data. I mean, they're supposed to be, right?
Yeah, I mean, sorry. So I think the idea of patient-reported outcome measures, they've been in our competencies for quite a while. I think in 2012 is when we first started seeing like clinical outcomes assessment, which would incorporate this. And I think with any competencies slash standard, oftentimes there is this general description of what needs to occur. But there isn't like a specific thing where you have to say, you know, you have to demonstrate that, I don't know, each student is using 10 outcome measures during their clinical experience. So I think programs have quite a bit of flexibility to kind of explore each of those things. But they also have to be able to demonstrate that they're doing it, but there isn't a quick and fast data point for us to highlight, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And as you were saying that, the core competencies are now embedded in the new standards, which should include our content standards. So there's definitely one in there about patient-centered care, if not others that are embedded throughout.
Great. Going on the other side of things, so how do the use of patient-reported outcome measures influence third-party reimbursement and influence the patients themselves?
So I will say that anecdotally, I've heard students say like, oh, it's really strange that I'm using these outcome measures and I'm getting some pushback from patients because it's so abnormal or new to the patients. And I think part of it is just changing the culture of the clinical setting. And so I think that oftentimes it can be a barrier because it's a social barrier in which the clinician might not actually feel comfortable implementing it because they're getting pushback from their patients. And I say the strategy behind that would just to normalize it. I think if you say, well, I know this hasn't been done in the past, but I practice this way. And so everyone's going to, you know, complete this outcome measure. And it's not just this specific patient. It's all my patients that I'm going to see over the course of the year. In terms of third party reimbursement, I'm not quite sure. So it was a question about how, if it will it promote us to begin getting third-party reimbursement?
So how is what is the importance of patient-reported outcome measures in terms of third-party reimbursement?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, we don't have very much data to support that in athletic training because we don't have third-party reimbursement. But if you look at another healthcare discipline like physical therapy, reimbursement is or patient-reported outcomes is a key to getting them paid. They have to demonstrate certain patient outcomes in order for them to demonstrate effectiveness of treatment and also that you're creating some meaningful change in the patient. So it is definitely key in third-party reimbursement. I'm just not confident that that's very specific to athletic training, but if you were to practice in that type of model, patient-reported outcome measures would definitely be a fundamental aspect of what we would report.
I agree.
So for you, Dr. Hoke, can you speak to the advantages of the MDPA, which you evaluated in your manuscript, and kind of give a summary of the components from a clinical perspective?
Yeah, so the MDPA was the reason why we started using the DPA in our previous research was because it was developed for high-functioning, physically active patient populations that are similar to the ones that we would see in clinical practice, and by athletic trainers also. So something that we felt that we could begin to utilize and look at some of those important properties to support moving forward for clinicians to use in their practice. And what we did in some of Megan Houston's dissertation work was we looked at the construct of that DPA, the original DPA, to identify whether or not that DPA could have two similar summary components that we might find equivalent or like the SF instruments. And so what she was able to do with some of that work was identify a mental summary component and a physical summary component. And those questions are related more to physical function, and then the other ones to, you know, the mental well-being and social well-being. We worked on that to then begin to look at some of the, you know, the data that we were finding, breaking it up into those two summary components and then also a total score. So it still relates back to some of the previous work of the DPA and some of the literature that's utilized the DPA also in other areas. I like the instrument because the questions are pretty straightforward. And they do, you know, the patient that's answering it can relate to some of the questions that it's asking. And it does have some higher functioning questions than something like your traditional SF-12 does, as that was really developed and geared towards a more general population. So when we look at some of those questions, you know, our patient that walks in, you know, with an ankle sprain or a post ACL reconstruction, even they might not really register a lot of disability on some of those questions, because it was geared, you know, for a general population, and our patient probably can still do a lot of their ADLs, right? Might be a little uncomfortable, but they're still doing them. They're just not doing the things that they want to do, like twisting, like pivoting, like jumping, and those types of things, like that questionnaire asked. So that's where we did a lot of that work. And then with this study that we have in JAT now, it was really looking at the validity of that instrument, correlating it and its summary components to the SF-12 and its component scores.
Great, thank you. So to wrap things up, I'd like to hear from both of you guys of what is your kind of key takeaway related to patient-reported outcome measures, and if we start tomorrow and do just one thing, what it would be? Dr. Lamb.
So keep it simple. I think if we're going to move forward as a profession as a whole, we all have challenges that we're dealing with, but if we just drill it down to just one simple question that everyone answers, we'll be much better off to at least start off and to build momentum.
Thank you. Dr. Hoke, what's your takeaway? How do I start?
How do you start? I think really stepping back and looking at your resources. So, you know, what do you have right now that tomorrow you could start asking that one question? What are your plans to do that? And formulating almost like a standard operating procedure, right? So how am I going to do this and do it routinely? Is how I would start. So get to know your flow, get to know your practice, and then give yourself an achievable goal within your resources.
Great. Well, thank you guys both so much for joining us tonight. And just a reminder to everybody out there that's watching, you can always go back, rewatch this, or the podcast, it'll be available as a podcast version as well. And that it will be released next Monday morning through the JAT feed. And again, thank you guys so much for providing us with a wealth of take-home messages. And I really appreciate your time this evening.
Thanks for having us.
Have a great night.
You too.
Thank you.